Hello, this is Christian Okoye, former Kansas City Chiefs. You are listening to Grilling Truth.
Welcome to the Grilling Truth CFL Legends Show. I'm your host, Mike Goodpasser. Right now, I want to welcome in my co-host, Brian Schmidt.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, bud. This is our first CFL Legends Show. As listeners know, if you've listened to our NFL shows, we've had guys like Kenny Anderson, Roger Craig, Roman Gabriel, long list, which you can check out on our website, thegrillingtruth.net. So today we're starting our Canadian Football League Legends Show, and our guest today won four Grey Cups with a CFL All-Star running back. Help us welcome to the CFL Legends Show, Robert Drummond.
Thank you for having me, guys. The legend is a little overstating. I mean, I'm a former CFL player. I like to see myself, but it's a nice compliment.
We had to call the show something, Robert, all right? Give us a break. You did win four Grey Cups, so we'll just go with it.
Yeah, well, thank you.
All right, so tell us a little bit about when you first started playing football and who some of your early influences were.
You know, when I first started playing football, I was a five-year-old kid, you know, basically attached to my mother's hip, you know, but she really didn't, my dad didn't really care if I played sports or not. You know, I just wanted me to be happy, but my mom just wanted me to go out there and burn a lot of energy because she was only at home with me all the time, you know, so she signed me up for flag football for the Western Tennessee Wildcats in Syracuse, New York, and I just remember just crying like the first practice because, you know, as a little boy, you know, you don't know what to expect. You know, you're just running around with a bunch of other little kids my age. You know, I had no idea what to expect. I knew nothing about football. But thankfully, I stayed with the sport. I had a great time at the end of that year. I went out to play Pop Warner, went out to high school, and, you know, the rest is my folklore, as you'll say. You know, but it was a great experience for me getting involved with football, and I owe my parents that.
Once you got to your high school, talk a little about your high school career, and you know, obviously there had to become a point in, you know, as you're playing high school, when you started realizing, man, you know, I've got an opportunity to continue on and go to college, and so talk a little bit about that when you were in high school and your high school career, and just when you realized, man, I really have an opportunity to play college football.
You know, high school was interesting to me for the simple fact that, you know, most freshmen don't play varsity football in high school, let alone, you know, start on a varsity football team. I came as a freshman, and I started and played on my varsity football team because of my size, speed, and athleticism. You know, I see some of my old coaches now, and I always ask them, you know, at what point did you realize I was capable or able to probably play at the next level? I mean, by next level, I mean Division I sports. And they told me from the minute I walked into that high school field, just my athleticism, the way I carried myself, how much I believed in myself, my confidence, and I had the size and speed. And what helped me a lot also, and took a lot of the pressure off me, was the simple fact that we had another player on my high school football team named Scott Swades, who was also a Division I athlete. He was being recruited by Syracuse, Boston College, Penn State, all these other big schools also. So when they came to look at him and recruit him, they noticed me also. I mean, I don't really understand if kids realize that when there's another kid on your team who's being recruited by a lot of schools, the scouts just don't notice them. They observe everybody. So if you're a talented kid out there, you're going to get noticed also. So he helped me out a lot in being noticed by some big schools also. You know, and then Scott went on to play at Syracuse. He went on to be drafted in the second round by the Miami Dolphins. So he was definitely a talented athlete. You know, as somebody who I looked up to, somebody I learned a lot from. And being a young high school athlete as a freshman, Scott was 2 years older than me. You know, there were times in games where I beat myself up because I didn't think the seniors liked me because here I am, you know, this snotty-nosed little freshman, and I came in and basically was just a star on my team. You know, and I wasn't trying to be a star. I was just trying to play a sport that I loved. You know, but eventually he allowed them to be able to accept me. And again, like a fairy tale story, you know, the rest is history because I went on to have an illustrious high school career, you know, winning championships in high school, getting a scholarship offer, signing early. I decided as a sophomore to go play at Syracuse because I wanted to go to the same college as my mom, you know, which I thought would be cool and get a degree, which we both have a degree from Syracuse University, which is what I wanted to accomplish, and I did. You know, but high school was fun for me. It's the times I'll never forget, and I'll always remember because it taught me that I loved and had a passion for the game of football.
All right, so you went to Syracuse. Was Coach McPherson there when you were recruited?
Coach McPherson was there. He was the main one recruiting me. I mean, he had recruiters Ivan Fears and Randy Etzel. You know, Ivan Fears, Randy Etzel was last in Maryland coaching, and Ivan Fears is a wide receiver coach with the New England Patriots. But they were my local recruits, Coach Maddox pretty much recruited me basically himself.
All right, you want to talk a little bit about your relationship with Coach McPherson?
You know, Coach Mack, what can you say about him? Coach Mack is one of the best coaches I've ever had, and for the simple fact that he understands how to get the best out of his players. You know, he let us be men. You know, he allowed us to believe in ourselves, and he just put us in an atmosphere where he just didn't want to see us successful on the football field. He expected us to be successful off the field as well. You know, be gentlemen, be kind, be caring, work when you really have to work to, you know, and just put into this world what you expect out of it. You know, and that's the one thing on and off the football field that you can always get from Coach Mack. You're gonna get his honesty. You're gonna get what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. And there's a big difference. You know, we need to hear these things. Of course, we want to hear other things. You know, go out, have fun, party. You know, get in trouble as much as you can because you can correct your mistakes. And no, you know, we didn't need to hear those things. You know, we needed to hear the things that we really, you know, needed to be successful. And that's one thing I instilled, the one thing I gained from Coach Mack as far as that process of being a young adolescent at the time, learning his way throughout college to try and become and be a better person.
Well, one thing that's interesting is, was Syracuse your only choice, or were there other schools that were recruiting you that were in the mix that you were possibly looking to go to?
Oh, no, I was looking at a lot of other schools. I mean, I was being recruited by Tennessee, Boston College, Rutgers, USC, because of my size. I was what they called a hybrid. You know, I was a big, strong, fast kid. So, yes, I played running back, but I could play free safety. I could play cornerback. I could play outside linebacker. I could play wide receiver. So many different schools were looking at me for so many different positions to play in football. Plus, I was a track sprinter. I was a track star. So there are a lot of schools out there that are recruiting me to possibly run track. So, you know, it was my choice. It was my decision. So being recruited by a lot of schools, people don't understand. It's just an exhausting process. You know, as someone who didn't like to upset or disappoint people, you know, I mean, I would be upset when I narrow my choices down. And, you know, and say, take for instance, I mean, I visited USC, but the flight out there was just so long. Before I even got off the plane, I told myself there's no way I'm coming out here because it's just too long. But I felt bad because I really, really liked Greg Robinson, John Robinson, I should say, the coach out there. And I, you know, Marcus Allen was my idol. He was from the USC folklore. You know, Steve Smith, you know, it was out there also. So, but there are guys out there who I really, you know, admire and look up to. But I just knew in my heart that it wasn't for me because it was just too long of a flight. You know, and once I visited the campus, it just wasn't for me. Syracuse was the best fit for me, though.
All right, you want to talk a little bit about your teammates while you were at Syracuse? You guys had some really good teams back then, mid to late 80s.
I could go on and on and on all day talking about teammates for Syracuse.
Just
you know,
give us a couple,
for,
then. How about that?
I mean, just from my quarterback, Donnie McPherson, who is one of my favorite players to ever play up at Syracuse University, you know, just to show his leadership and just to show the qualities that he had and instilled in us. Remember, when you're an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old, in college or university, I mean, you're a young adolescent, so you're learning. So you're learning from the seniors that are there before you, the ones who basically paved the road. You know, and I learned a lot from Don McPherson, the quarterback there, who was 3 years ahead of me, two years ahead of me. Moose Johnson of Cowboys fame. You know, the Daryl Johnson, the running back. He was my fullback for 4 years at Syracuse. Michael Lawrence, who wore the traditional 44 at Syracuse, was my running back mate. We split time to win championships and things up there. You know, Teddy Gregory, who was a first-round pick, the nose guard. You know, he was just tough, hard as nails. You know, always got things done when he had to walk on the field and taught us how to be gentlemen off the field. You know, Tim Green, who was a senior when I was a freshman, the Rhodes Scholar, you know, the academic All-American, the All-American football player who was drafted in the first round by the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, as I said before, Marcus Paul, who's a strength conditioning coach right now with the New York Giants, who was an All-American free safety, who was my class. We had such talented, humble, you know, respectable gentlemen on that team that it doesn't surprise me that Syracuse was as dominant as we were back when we played, you know. And that's what football's about. Football's about having, you know, not just a group of guys that come together to win, you know, to have wins so colleges can go to a bowl game for that year. Yes, that's all well and good. That's great. But football is a family. You know, I still talk to those guys to this day. what we had to go through to go, because in 1987 we went undefeated. We went 11-0, and then we played Auburn in the Sugar Bowl. And if it wasn't for them kicking a tie or kicking a field goal, the tie at 16-16 with something like 20 seconds on the clock, we probably would have had a stake in the claim for national champions. But, you know, just to go through all that adversity, just to go through the wins and losses, you know, I was just talking to Tommy Kane about it. You know, we were down by 17 points in the first quarter against Boston College that year. We managed to come back and win that game 48-17. You know, we were down 24-7 to Virginia Tech going into halftime. We ended up winning that game by 38-24. So just so many things that come from behind and just go out there through the adversity. You know, you learn and you grow. And those are my brothers. They're not just my teammates. So that's a part of my life I'll never forget. The NFL, the same way. There are guys I play with, you know, in Toronto, you know, and in Philadelphia who will be my brothers for the rest of my life for the simple fact that we went in battle together. And by battle, I don't mean like the Army battle where it's country versus country and things of that nature. I mean battle when you're battling against a common opponent. And our common opponent in the CFL, it was a Hamilton, you know, or a Montreal or a BC or a Saskatchewan. So when you're battling and when you're fighting for something you believe in, you know, as far as the sport, you know, you definitely have your brothers at arms with you. And by brothers at arms, it's no disrespect to anybody in the military service, but it's a you know, it's pride with being a former player.
You were bringing up some of the great games back in that season. What was it like playing against West Virginia, especially in 88, you know, when, you know, they had Major Harris and that team? Those were some very high-intensity games. I remember being in high school back then, and I just remember this seemed just very high-intensity games. What was that like?
I mean, it's hard to explain. I mean, when you're in a situation, especially if you're a player. I mean, from a fan standpoint, I can sit here and look at it now and be like, you know, in retrospect, say to myself, it's like, okay, there's no pressure on me as a fan because I'm sitting up here in the stands or sitting here in front of a television watching the game. But when you're in the actual game, you know, you're getting hit, you're trying to make the catches, you're trying to make the blocks, you know, you're trying to make the plays, score the touchdowns. It's high pressure, you know. But for me personally, I live, you know, for moments like that, you know, because those are the moments that make or break you. You know, I can always tell myself, you know, I'm a human being. I can make mistakes, but I can recover from my mistake. You know, just, I can make a mistake, but give me, I used to always tell myself, just my private, you know, little message to myself, give me the opportunity to make up for the mistake I made. And that's how I would approach every single game. You know, watching Major Harris, when, like, in 1987, we got accepted to go to the Sugar Bowl about an hour before kickoff. We accepted the invitation to go to the Sugar Bowl. We were 10-0 at the time. But the U.S. F&G Sugar Bowl, they wanted an 11-0 team coming there. You know, we went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The West Virginia, they had us down by 7 points with like a minute and 30 left on the clock. They were kicking the ball off. And I remember I had a concussion in that game. I had a 100-yard rush and a touchdown in that game, but I actually took a hit where I had a concussion. And just to watch that game, and to watch the adversity of that team be able to go down and not only score a touchdown, but to also score the two-point conversion to win the game, that's one of the most dynamic and exciting games I've ever been a part of, but just by how it played out. You know, and that's what I mean. Like, when you're on the field and you know you've accomplished something, not just for yourself, not just for your team, but the community that surrounds you and supports you, that's the best feeling in the world.
All right, and then finally, you wrap up your career at Syracuse. What was your draft day experience like in 1989?
Horrible. And by horrible, I mean it's stressful. I mean, it was a great day. Don't get me wrong. I mean, a very, very proud moment. A moment for the simple fact that just everything that you fought for, you know, or the getting up in early in the mornings, the running, the training, the going to class, the getting your body prepared, getting your mind prepared. It all accumulates to this one day of being able to have, at the time it was Pete Rozelle, stand at the podium and call your name. And I remember just going through the whole process, through the workouts, going to the NFL Combine, flying down to Los Angeles, flying out, you know, to New York, flying down to Miami to work out for these teams. And just saying to myself, it's like, you know what, wow, is this really going to happen? You know, and I remember listening to Mel Kiper saying there's a chance that I could go between the first round and the third round. You know, if this team picks here, this team selects here. You know, and that my big holdback was but I climbed the draft boards by the postseason games I had. I had very, very good postseason games. Plus, I did very, very well in the combine. You know, and And who get Sammy Smith, a junior, came out that year. Bobby Humphreys, a junior, came out that year. There are about four or five talented juniors that came out that year that pushed me back. But you know what? I mean, I didn't care where I went. I mean, I just wanted to get drafted. I remember just sitting in my basement. That's when the draft started at 7:30 in the morning. And I remember my mom had a draft party, but I didn't want anything to do with it because I was already a wreck and I was already nervous. And I remember just sitting downstairs in my basement. And just watching the draft, and then Troy Aikman was selected, which was no surprise. Then Barry Sanders was selected, which was no surprise also. And then all of a sudden, they showed my picture. And I remember just hearing upstairs just roars out loud, and I said to myself, "There's no way. I mean, that good where I'm going the second player overall in the draft. I mean, I'm good, but not that good." But then I remember my agent calling me saying, "You know, this is a good omen. This is a good sign." And I was like, "You know what?" And then during that process, each round took like 15 minutes, so the first four picks could take an hour, which it did. And you're just sitting there waiting, and waiting is just torturous on a person in the draft. I'm glad they sped it up, full forward now. But back then, it was just a process of just waiting to hear your name called, waiting to hear your name called. You know, towards the middle of the first round, I got calls from the Redskins, calls from the Packers, calls from a few teams saying that if I drafted them, would they love to, would I like playing for the organization? I told them, "Sir, you know, I would love to play. I just want the opportunity to play. I don't care where I get drafted." Yeah, I remember just watching the first round went by, which you know, and it wasn't a shock to me that they didn't go in the first round. You know, I just wanted to play. But then, I mean, I've been told, I'm going to go between the first and third round. And I remember just watching the second round play itself out, and then I got a call from the Redskins. They said if I'm still available at the second pick, they were going to take me, but then they ended up taking, I think, an offensive lineman. Then my agent called me and said, "Don't worry. So, you'll get drafted." At that point, just from being frustrated with myself. I mean, I told myself, granted, this was still in the second round. And I told myself, you know what? I'm not going to get drafted. They don't like me. And that's what players do. They fight themselves. So what I did was I got a football and I went outside and I just started playing football with my cousins because all my cousins and family were at the house. And I remember just standing outside in the backyard, I'm playing football with my cousins, and all of a sudden, all this media who were at my house come running around. They're like, "Robert, congratulations." I was like, "Congratulations on what?" They're like, "You just got selected by the Philadelphia Eagles." I was like, I'm like, "Yeah, right." Now all of a sudden, my mother opens the back door, and she's like, screams, like, "Robert, Coach Ryan's on the phone." I was like, "Are you serious?" So I go and I grab the phone, and I'm like, because I thought they were joking. I didn't think I was going to get drafted at that point. And I'm like, "Hello?" And then Buddy Ryan, who I've flown back with, I flew through Philadelphia coming back from the NFL Combine, and he was on the plane. And he was like, "If you're still around, if you're still around after the third round, we have a gym and getting you. We're going to take you." And he's like, "I told you I'd take you." And I was like, "Wow, thanks, Coach." And that was that hectic day. It really, really, really was.
Now, you're with the Eagles, and then you had a time period, a couple years between time with the Eagles and then your time with Baltimore and the CFL. What were you doing during that time? And was there any point in that time where you thought, well, maybe, again, professional football is not in my future? What was going on with you at that time?
You know, it's a process, and any and every athlete can tell you this. I mean, a lot of times it's just, you can be the most talented athlete in the world. It's about being in the right place at the right time. You know, and for me, just being in that situation was being in the right place at the right time. Buddy Ryan was the coach that drafted me, and but then when Buddy got fired, Rich Kotite took over, and just Rich Kotite, me and him didn't see eye to eye, just didn't understand one another at all, And I ended up leaving Philadelphia, Plan B, to go to Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh had their whole dynamic, and I mean, no matter how, I had a great camp in Pittsburgh, but ended up being like one of the last cuts in Pittsburgh. And the same thing out in Denver, they didn't draft me, but they saw how talented I was, but they can't take this talented guy over a talented guy that they drafted because that makes them look bad. So it's just getting caught up in the politics and the dynamics of football. And everyone has self-doubt. And at some point, I mean, I started doubting myself. It's like, can I play? Am I talented as I think I was? What did I do wrong? I had a great camp. It wasn't that but it's like you get your friends and family to sit there, and they believe in you, and that my talent hadn't left. But it's just self-doubt because now you put yourself in a position where others are judging you. And when others judge you, by judging you, I mean release you when you know you're talented enough to make a team, you feel bad about yourself. So I was a personal trainer. I was still keeping myself in shape. And I was still telling myself, it's like, one day, someone's going to give you an opportunity. Now, what are you going to make of that opportunity? And I've always been a hard worker. So I knew the bench teacher said, if you stay in shape, if I just keep working out, just keep running everything, I would have an opportunity, and that's when Baltimore came knocking.
All right, so how big of an adjustment was it to you playing in the CFL? I would think it probably wasn't that difficult because, the CFL, you were the perfect running back for that league.
You know, football is football. And the biggest adjustment in CFL was just the 20-second game clock and how wide the field was. I mean, I had never experienced anything like that, so, I had to adjust my training, where in the NFL, I had to be in good shape. In the CFL, I had to be in great shape because you're constantly running all the time. I mean, it's just go, 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 go. It's like the offenses they run now. We were running back in the mid-80s, mid-90s with Baltimore, that high up on the up-tempo full board, go. It was lineup, go. Lineup, go. You know, so that took getting used to. And it also, to me, it took getting used to I wasn't a star. I wasn't the star anymore. You know, I had to learn how to become a role player because at the time they had Mike Pringle, who was like all world as a running back and with Baltimore, you know, and I had no problem with that, you know, because I like being a part of organizations that win, you know, so, and I was, like I said before, a hybrid where I could play just about anywhere. So putting me at fullback was, you know, so now you have a fullback who's 6'4", 230 pounds, that can run a 4.3. It's like the CFL had never seen a fullback like that before. So it was another weapon in the arsenal that Don Matthews had in the CFL that could get us to go to Grey Cups and win championships, and I was glad to be a part of that. Plus, I learned. I just learned how to play fullback. I learned how to play receiver. I learned how to play every other position. So I knew one day I had the opportunity to sign as a free agent to go play somewhere where I could be, you know, the key and the cog to us getting the championships. And I was surrounded years later.
Talk a little bit about the 94 season. I mean, obviously, it was your first season, but, I mean, what a, you know, incredible season. You know, first year in Baltimore and just everything about that certainly was magical because I know that in the CFL had come into the States and really the one team that really took off in the States from a CFL standpoint was Baltimore.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that 94 season.
That was a magic season. You know, I signed with Baltimore halfway through their season, you know, and I was just trying to, you know, at some point just get adjusted to the CFL game, get adjusted to new teammates, get adjusted to a new city, get adjusted to playing football again, you know, get adjusted to playing fullback, a position I had never really played before. So it was a huge year of adjustment, you know, but what a great group of guys, you know, they accepted me, you know, like they believed in my talent, they believed in my athleticism, you know, and I was just part of something special that year. And we ended up going to the Grey Cup that year, and I didn't understand the importance and how valuable it was to be able to get to a championship of that magnitude because I was still trying to understand the Canadian football game. You know, so just playing in the Grey Cup, still my head was in the cloud, my head was in the fog because I still didn't understand the Canadian Football League game. You know, it wasn't until that following year, you know, that we had another special year and we went back again that I got it. I understood. But that was a very, very special team. You know, I've been a part of some great teams, some great Grey Cup teams, but that team is the most talented, the most athletic team I've ever been a part of before.
Yeah, you want to talk to us a little bit about that first Grey Cup, 26-23 loss, one of the great Grey Cup games ever played?
You know, it was a great Grey Cup for BC, maybe. But, you know, you go back and watch the film, and there's just so many mistakes we as a football team made. I mean, we had beaten BC about 3 weeks before, like 48-7 in Baltimore. And then they come out, we just came out flat. I think we came out overconfident. I mean, because a lot of our players weren't playing like themselves. They're just playing like out of body, I would say. You know, but as I said before, BC had been in the Grey Cup before, you know, so they were used to it. Us as a new American team here in Baltimore, we had never experienced anything like that. So it was like, but by the time, you know, we calmed down and started to play our game, our brand of football, you know, the game was over. But we learned from that mistake, you know, and we corrected it the next year.
Okay, you played with one of my favorite players back as a high school kid in 1987. I remember late one night on TV as a Division I AA championship game, and I'm watching Tracy Hamm against Furman just do unbelievable things. So I always kind of followed him. What was it like playing with him?
Tracy was a natural born leader. You know, he's just the type of person, even during the game, that just had a knack for taking control of everything. Knew every situation, knew every down and distance, knew how to put you in a position to be successful. And, you know, and that's what a great quarterback, I said, you know, should have the ability to do. Be able to understand the dynamics of what's going on in every single play before it even happens. So on first down, you can visualize what's going to happen so you're ready for second down. And Tracy was always good with that. And that, he's actually one of the people who I learned how to do that. Always expect the unexpected. You'll never be surprised, he used to always say. You know, so when you expect the unexpected, you can act instead of react. When you're reacting, you're a second late. When you're acting, you're always on top of everything. You're a second ahead. You know, and that's one of the smartest analogies I ever heard somebody. So I always try and go through my mind. During football games, the night before, I would go through an entire game at least twice in my mind. So when it happened during the game, I'd already knew it was going to happen, so it never surprised me. So I'm already one step ahead. And that's the one thing playing with Tracy really showed me how to do was be where he expects you to be, and then all of a sudden it makes everything go smoothly. If I'm a step behind, it's going to be a late pass. It can get picked. It can get dropped. It can get – so there's so many different things I learned from him, and I learned how to play the CFL game. And I gave it a lot to Tracy, and I'd like to say congratulations for Tracy being in the Hall of Fame because it's definitely deserved.
All right. Now, the next year you guys won the Grey Cup. You want to talk a little bit about what that was like for you? And then on top of that, one of my favorite players, I think the greatest CFL running back, Mike Pringle. You want to talk a little bit about him also?
I mean, what a special year. Mike is one of the hardest workers that, you know, I've ever been around as a running back. I mean, I always told myself, I was probably the best athlete on the team, but I pride myself on being a hard worker also. But Mike's someone who matched me with intensity and it worked as hard as I did. You know, so he's someone that it was a joy to be a fullback for him because it was so easy to block for him. You know, we gave teams fits for that. Now they can move. Here's this big running back. They can move outside. And they were trying to match me up with a linebacker, and I'd run right by him. And, you know, Tracy would just throw me a bomb for a touchdown. So we were matchup problems for teams, you know, and it created a dynamic for that teams didn't know how to defend us, you know. But still, deep in my heart, you know, deep down inside, I still consider myself a running back. And that year, I really didn't get a lot of carries because they let Mike run the ball all the time. And I was very proud of Mike, and I was very, you know, very gracious for the simple fact that be able to be on the field with him, you know, and watch him run. But me as a running back, me as a competitor, I yearned for the simple fact of being able to carry the ball. And I wanted to prove, you know, to myself, you know, that I'm still a talented running back. You know, yes, we have the great Mike Pringle on our team, and yes, I'm going to block and win the Grey Cup and do everything I can to make this team successful. You know, but when it comes time to me being a free agent going into that next year, I knew there was no way I was going to be able to play with Mike Pringle again because I knew there's no way. I mean, I was going to be able to play running back because a fullback because I'm not. I wasn't a fullback. I mean, I was a running back, and I did, you know, and I wanted and I deserved as hard as I worked to run the ball. You know, that's where my trek to going to Toronto happened the next year.
Now, when you moved on to Toronto again, another quarterback that I love to watch, Doug Flutie. Talk about playing with him and some of the differences. You know, you played with Tracy Ham first couple of years, and now you're playing with Doug Flutie. Talk about the differences and what it was like to play with him.
Oh, it was a blast to play with Doug. I mean, Doug was just another heady player who gets it. I mean, me going to – I remember Montreal because the old Baltimore team went to Montreal, and I remember just getting a call from Jim Pop. It's Jim Spiros every single day because they wanted me to sign back with Montreal. And I told them, I said, like, you know, thank you, but I don't mean, like, I want to play fullback. And I know, I mean, Pringle was at the time trying to make his NFL runs, but I know if Pringle didn't make the NFL, he was coming back to ball or back to Montreal, and I was going to be a fullback again. I said, I didn't want that. And Coach Matthews told me, it's like, Robert, you come up here and be a player at Toronto, you're going to be a fullback. I mean, you're going to be the running back. You're going to be the one who carries the ball all the time. And that's what I wanted. And then I started to see the team he was assembling where he got Flutie as his quarterback. You know, granted, I could have went back and played with Tracy, but again, I would have been a fullback. I didn't want to be a fullback. You know, I get the chance to play with Mike Pinball Clemens. I get the chance to play with a bunch of players, you know, who are just Paul Mazzotti. And I was like, you know, what a great opportunity or what a great chance, you know, for me not to just be able to be on a great team with a great coach, but go to what I thought at the time was a great city because I'd been visited Toronto the year before, and I was like, wow, it was a very relaxed, laid back, you know, enjoyable city, and the people here were nice. So being able to just go, and I remember that first game, we were playing Hamilton, you know, and Matt Dunnigan was a quarterback, And I remember just, and I had hurt myself in training camp, but I mean, I was just so, after all I went through, you know, with the Eagles and just, you know, sitting out 2 years and just playing fullback and everything, I finally get the opportunity, you know, to be put in the position to where I can go out there and let myself shine and let myself enjoy, you know, what it is I'd love to do. You know, I remember just like I pulled my hip flexor in training camp, but I wasn't going to let that stop me. And I just remember just going into the Sky Dome, it was called at the time, you know, and playing against Hamilton with Matt Dunnigan, you know, and Earl Winfield, the receiver. And I just remember saying to myself, you know, no matter what happens here, win or lose, I'm just so glad to be back and, you know, and be in a position where I'm able to play a game and have fun and enjoy it. And actually, that wasn't the first game. That was the second game. Our first game was against Montreal, the old Baltimore team in Montreal. And I ended up having a great game that game, playing against my old team that scored 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards rushing. Where it's like, and I just remember saying, this is the element I enjoy being in. I enjoy being a part of great, great teams, just playing a position and doing what I need to do to help my team win and possibly get to the Grey Cup.
Now, you made it to the Grey Cup, what, 3 years in a row? 1996, one of my favorite games, the snow game.
I went 4 years in a row.
Yeah, I won it the last three.
The
third win was the snow game in 1996.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about that game?
Oh, I mean, all week long, it's like hot the entire week. We're out there practicing in Iowa and everything. I mean, it's so hot. We're like, wow, it's going to be a warm Grey Cup. It's going to be fun. I remember Marcelo Simmons, who was my roommate back in Mississauga, but also my roommate on the road game. And I remember just waking up the morning of the Grey Cup. And just walking over, like, because we kept in a hotel, we always closed the shades because we wanted to darken there. And I remember pulling the shades back and just seeing a whiteout. And I remember closing the shades and saying to myself, I still got to be dreaming. There's no way it's snowing like this. And I opened it up again, sure enough, still a whiteout. And I'm like, Marcelo, you might want to wake up and look at this. And he's like, what? He wakes up, he's like, are you kidding me? I was like, yeah, it's a whiteout. I had never played in a game where literally you couldn't see the ground during warm-ups walking into the field. They're trying to shovel it. As fast as they shoveled it, it's as fast as the snow came down. At some point, I thought they were going to cancel that game. But then we started to see the fans coming to the game and everything. And the good thing was it wasn't cold. It was just a lot of snow. And what a fun game, back and forth, you know, ebb and flow. I mean, anyone could have won that game. I'm just glad. I was gracious and glad that we did. Because that was there were some great catches from Eddie Brown's great catch, kick it off his foot, where Eddie Brown's a good friend of mine, to Jimmy Cunningham's punt return, to Adrian Smith's kickoff return, interception return that sealed the game. There's so many great plays in that game. We went back and forth like two prize fighters, you know what, and I was just glad that we got the victory.
The following year in 97, again, you played for Grey Cup, but that was also that Toronto team. That was a 15-3 team. That was a very dominant team. Talk a little bit about that season and about that Grey Cup.
We just decided. I mean, it just when we had the best offense and the best defense in the league. So and most teams when they practice, they'll go what they call north and south. North is the starter, south is the second team. So they go north against the south. So the north offense against the south defense, because they don't want the two dominant teams or the two starters beating up on one another or going against one another because you have the two best. We did the opposite. We put our starters on offense against our starters on defense because we're like, you know what? In order for us to stay sharp and to stay good, we have to go against the best. So if we're going against the best defense in practice, when it comes time to playing in games, I won't say it's easy, but it's like we played against the best, so this is nothing. And they felt the same way in offense. You know, so we did that the entire year, going back and forth. And we knew we were a dominant team, and all we had to do was just go out there and execute our game plan, and no one could stop us. And we just ran through everybody that year as a football team. You know what? To the point where it's simply, you know, just no one could really match up with us on offense and on defense. We just blitz them, come out to the bus. You know, and that was a fun Grey Cup year. But that Grey Cup was entirely different because what we lacked in snow from the year before. We had, it was like minus 47 at kickoff, and I had never played in a game so frigid and so cold before in my life. Again, once again, I woke up that morning and went to look outside and saw the temperature from that one building they have there in Edmonton, and it said, I forget how they do it in Celsius in Canada, and I just remember it just being cold. and saying to myself, this is going to be a long game. That's the first time in my life I never really wanted to come outside for a game because it was so cold. But what you don't know about me, I don't like cold. I don't like cold at all. I really get injuries during games where my trainers, physical therapist would tell me I need to put ice on it, you know, in order for the swelling to go down. I'd be like, I'll play with the pain. Don't put ice on it. Only time I like ice in is when I have a cold drink. That's it. Other than that, don't put ice on me. And my teammates would always laugh at that and say, well, how could you play in Toronto and play in Syracuse where it's cold all the time? I said, mentally, I'm tough, but I don't like cold at all. But that game was a cold game. It ended up, because I drank so much water, I ended up cramping up and missing the third quarter. But I still had a great game. But at that time, the game was in hand, so we won. And, again, it's something that folklore has talked about.
All right, so your last Grey Cup, British Columbia, won the Grey mm-hmm. Cup, going into playoffs playoffs with a losing record. You want to talk to us a little bit about that run?
I mean, to have a team so talented, it's just we never gelled. We never came together as a group. I mean, in practice, you know, we think we've been playing together for 13, 14, 15 years, but come game time, just so many simple mistakes. And they always say it's the small things that count, but a lot of small things have been caught up to us. You know, we had Alfred Jackson, you know, we had Eddie Brown, you know, we had Rod Harris, you know, we had Jimmy Cunningham, Damon Allen was a quarterback, Shaw Millington was a fullback, I was a halfback. We had so many talented players. You know, Donnie Blair was on that team. Nothing but talent and all-stars across the board, but we could never gel as an offense. The last three games we gelled are the Western semifinal where we beat Edmonton. Then we played Calgary in the Western final. We beat Calgary. Then we played Montreal in a Grey Cup, and we beat Grey Cup. We played great those three games. We came together when we had to come together, and that was it. You know, for me and Shaun Millington, it was easy. They couldn't cover us both. You know, we're both power backs, but I was a back with speed. So it was tough for defense. They're going to run him inside or run me outside. You had no idea what you were getting. The first half, they ran him inside. He got he ended up having over 100 yards. You know, the second half, they thought they were going to run him inside. They ran me outside. I ended up having over 100 yards in the touchdown. So, you know, we were just hard defense. You know, and just we love creating matchup problems for teams because that's what you do when you're an offense. You're trying to find the best matchup and exploit it. And, again, watch another Grey Cup. And I happen to get the MVP for that Grey Cup, but I could have gave it to my offensive line because they did a great job. Because any running back will tell you, without an offensive line, you're not going anywhere. And they're the ones that open up the holes and protect the quarterback to allow him to throw. So I give my credit to all my offensive linemen because without them, there is no me.
Awesome. Now, you're coming down, in your career. What made you decide to hang it up? Because I know a lot of times for players, you know, it's hard to make that decision. What went into your thought process to finally decide to retire?
You know what? I mean, I ended up going back to Toronto in 2002, finishing up my career there, and I just remember just playing a game. We were playing in the Eastern Conference Final. We were playing against Montreal, and I remember just putting my heart and soul into just trying because I was used to going to championships and winning them. I mean, I've been on three different teams and all gone to Grey Cup. So, as you said, I've won four of them. You know, so I'm sitting there saying to myself, it's like, you know, it's just coming to the sideline and going into the locker room and hear these younger players, and all they talked about were their stats and about, you know, just getting to the NFL and how they didn't care about the team and they could care less about this. And I said to myself, I don't want to be a part of that. You know, if this young generation is that their feeling and that the way they think, you know, it's just like it's time for me to hang it up because I was about – playing. I mean, I spent 2 years in my when I knew I was talented enough to start for about probably every other, you know, CFL team as a running back. I spent 2 years playing fullback for the simple fact that I wanted to be a part of a championship team. You know, and these guys, all they could care less was about being a part of a championship team. They cared about themselves personally, and I was like, nah, it's time for me to go. And at that point, before I even walked off the field, I knew I was done. I mean, I just had no desire to be a part of that era. And I accomplished so much, and I just say, you know, I could walk away, and I could walk away my head high, and I could walk away knowing, you know, I left on my terms, not anyone else's terms.
All right. So, what occupies your time today?
I'm a personal trainer. I really enjoy people getting in shape. I own a gym. You know, I create systems that allows kids to be able to understand their athleticism. You know, I just divulge, and I mean, I do a lot of community speaking. Last week I rode a bike 10 miles for charity and American Diabetes Rise. I'm going to do one for cancer, and we'll just start doing things to give back. You know, I have a big name, you know, and it can help me to change the life of one person to be positive. You know, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I spent, you know, 15 years doing something I truly, truly love to do, trying to get the best I can. And that's being around all these kids and everything now. That's what I try and teach them. Just be better than the next person, and then, you know, pay it forward. And then that person can do the next person, and you can be better for the next person, and so on and so on. You know, because that's what these kids need to see, because we live in a crazy world. Woo! Do we ever.
Oh, yeah, we do. I mean, when you got running for president, well, we got running for president, that'll tell you how crazy the world is.
I mean, I don't sit here and judge anybody. I mean, that's not my place, you know, but I sit here and say when it affects me, I definitely can have a say in it. And I just look at Donald Trump and shake my head. And as I look at, just like I look at Hillary Clinton, and I shake my head, and I'm like, you know, they're agenda driven by what they think is right, but what you think is right is not always right for someone else. But they don't get that. And
no,
that's
sad. I think they're just driven by lining their own damn pocketbooks anyway.
They're just like anybody else. Their legacy. No, that's all they care about. They don't care. If they truly cared about the people, they would approach things the way they approach it entirely differently.
All right, Robert. Really, it was an honor having you on the show. Brian, you got any final words for Robert?
Well, I just appreciate the time. As a huge, you know, I became a CFL fan, and, you know, I've not only watched the game today, but I've gone back and watched, you know, games from, you know, the 90s and 80s and so many games, you know, with the Grey Cup, so, and seeing you play, and it's just been an honor to get a chance to talk to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, and I want to remind everybody that we are going to try to do this show every week. We will also have a CFL Weekly Pick'em show. Robert, if you're not doing anything on certain days and want to do a Pick'em show with me and Brian, you're always welcome.
Oh, sure. I'd love to come back if you had me.
Okay. I mean, we can do it weekly if you want.
Sure. Just let me know.
Okay, we'll talk about it then. So make sure you check out all the CFL articles, myself and David Landry, who calls himself Oz Davis on the site, go ahead and put up there. Make sure you catch me and Brian next week on the CFL Weekly Show. Hopefully Robert will be there. Make sure we go to thegruelingtruth.net, check out everything that goes on there. Gridiron Mo, www.gridiron Mo is our main sponsor. You can follow us on iHeart or listen to us on iHeart, iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn. Everywhere podcasts are available, you'll find The Grueling Truth. So for Robert Drummond, Brian Schmidt, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.
Thank you.